Wrote a blog post the other day about changing the MVC starter template, and I want to talk about that really quickly, and then I'll tell you why I'm talking about it with respect to the MVC storefront. First and foremost, what I want to point out here, this post is all about reorganizing the standard MVC starter site and kind of going with a more conventional approach that other frameworks use, and I really enjoy it. I like it. I like how all the code is stuck in one folder, including controllers and views. This kind of encapsulates the idea of an application here. And there's some changes that need to be made here and there, but generally, having the content in a public folder, stuff that's static, like scripts and CSS and other things, like HTML, some sites have HTML, I think that's a nice place for it. Got a comment here by Liam McLennan. It says, I've always kept data access services, etc., in separate projects. A lot of people have said that as well. It seems like it's better to have separation of concerns. And someone else, in fact, pointed that out a little bit down below here. I think it was Padgett Rowell said, you gotta have these in separate projects to separate concerns. And that's interesting. You know, I could see why people think that. It's a visual, sort of an aesthetic approach. If we take a look here at the project, I can see exactly where things go and how I'm sort of segregating them. However, the term separation of concerns has nothing to do with projects. And it's funny that my post was echoed the same day by Jeremy Miller, which is funny. Separating assemblies does not equal decoupling. I think he captures it right there in the title pretty well. His post is a little bit more opinionated than mine was after, but the idea here is, you know, a lot of people point out that visually, aesthetically, and everything else, developers are forced to kind of put things in a different location, or think things, I'm sorry, are kind of thinking through things a little bit differently. How can I make this more of a pure service, like business logic? How can I make this more of a pure data access component? And they're sort of cued by which project they're looking at. Having said all that, I should note that I was heavily tempted to put all these projects into just one web application because I want to make things as simple as I can, and moreover, I really want to be able to support Express users. However, I will have the need to share the DLLs from data and pipelines and services and so on in another project, so I'm going to keep them all separate. In addition, it should be pointed out that the pipelines project needs to stay in its own thing because Windows Workflow cannot be viewed from another project type. It needs to be inside of its own. So anyway, I'm going to keep everything the way it is. But, you know, it's a good discussion, and so let's keep moving. Okay, the great restructuring, part one. First thing I need to do here is to create the folder bucket that I'm going to throw everything into. And it's going to be called app. Now you might think, why don't you use app code, and so on and so forth. And the main reason for that is that if I use app code, the project gets confused, the compiler gets confused, and it tries to do runtime compilation versus compile time compilation, and so I'll get a lot of errors. So inside here, I am going to actually drop in my controllers and my views. And here we go. And you might think this is nutso. You might think I'm going to be breaking everything. But the step two here is going to be changing around my view engine a little bit. So let's do that. Great, everything went off. So you can see this is pretty easy work. So I'm gonna open up my global ASX right now. And on my application start, what I have to do here is I have to override the default view engine's ability to go find the views. Now, ideally, this should be as simple as coming in here and saying view engine is a default engine and then overriding some settings. Unfortunately, I can't do that just yet, but it's not so hard to do. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to come in here and I'm going to add a new item. It's going to be a class. Let's see, here it is. Oops, class. And I'm going to just call this, I'll call it the commerce. I could call it Rob's view engine. Commerce view, sorry, engines. This is why, if you're wondering why I skip things over sometimes. Okay, so I have my view engine here. I'm just calling it commerce view engine. And for lack of better words, I could change it later if I wanted to. But what this needs to do is this needs to inherit from a web form view engine. And it's that easy. So now what I need to do is I need to override the constructor here. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to come in here and say public commerce view engine. and I need to just overwrite some core bit of code. So I'll just come right back over here to my page, and the fun thing is I have this all written down right here, which is exciting. Copy and paste. It's the fun thing about having a blog. A lot of times I rewrite things so I can, or I write blog posts so I can remember them later, self-referencing stuff. So that's all I got to do. So right here, I'll explain this really quickly. Master location formats and view location formats are properties that are on the WebForm view engine, or the iView engine, I should say. And so what I'm doing here is I'm simply telling it, go look for the views in the app folder, views. And so this is for the master files, and for the regular view locations, look in app views, and then app views shared as well. And so we set the partial view locations to the view locations. We're all set. That's all we need to do for that. But what we need to do, come back here, is we need to register now our new view engine. We'll leave the old one as it is. So we need to say viewengines.add, whoops, .engines. There we are. That's it. So now, if I've done everything right, I should be able to just hit go. The reason I'm kind of walking you through all this is hopefully to show you how simple, easy it is. Let's see, the views shared. Almost easy. So now what I need to do is, I forgot about this part. I need to go into the actual view pages themselves, and I need to replace this line. If I go into index, I need to replace this master page file, which is hard-coded, but what I can do is I can come in here, hit H, control H I should say, and what I can do is go like that, app views, and I can set this to current project and take a deep breath, replace all. Oh man, that's scary. I don't know why that scares me. Always scares me. Okay, so if I've done that right, now what I should be able to do is refresh this. And look at that. It works. Just like that. Now, a lot of love needs to go to Phil and the team for this kind of thing. This application structure, once you start crawling under the hood and trying to tweak things a bit, I have to say, is some of the most extensible, wonderful code I seriously have ever seen. This is great. This is really good stuff. It's come to my attention that people really enjoy watching me screw up, and I've got a whole big bucket full of screw up for you right now, and it has to do with my favorite subject, which is routing. So right now I'm backed into a corner, and I wanted to show you what corner I'm backed into. So let's go ahead and take a look at let's take a look at Boots. You can take a look at the URL up here. You can see I have kind of a hard-coded stub in there called store. And then I have the category, and then I have the subcategory. So apparel, boots. Well, if I come in here and I typed in this, I'd get, looks like I'd get boots again. And the reason for that is if you come back in here to the catalog controller and you cruise on down here to the index method, here you can see right here, I'm pulling out all the information and I have to wrap this in a try-catch. And I gotta let it fail if I don't understand it. Well, the core of it is, I'm reading strings and I'm reading them off the URL. And a lot of people have said to me, this is not a good idea, and I completely agree with that. And there we go. And that's what I was hoping would happen. You can see I've got failure. And boom, that is just not a good idea for someone to be able to, you know, fail your application by changing the URL. So that's problem one. Okay. Well, the other problem is, what I wanted to be able to do here is follow kind of the restful convention of you know, having all the views that you need, like list, show, edit, blah, 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 in line, in place, ready to go, so you can actually administer stuff through the page here. And that's kind of the way Rails does it. They don't have the notion of an admin area where you go and you administer certain things. Now, the reason we have that in web forms is that we want, and ASP Classic and so on, is that we're able to lock that folder down with certain permissions because we used a folder-based approach. And so when you did that, you wanted to make sure you had everything in the proper folder. Well, we don't need to do that anymore because we're not really using folders. This isn't a file-based approach to a web application. As many people have said, this is kind of remote procedure calls. So if I log in here, and by the way, yes, I finally fixed this. I kind of have left it hanging in the wind. But if I log in here, and I say admin and password, and I log in, There we are. What I want to have now for administrators, this link here doesn't show up if you're not an administrator. That's what I want to have. I want to have a manage thing, and that manage thing is going to take me off to an edit page. Right now I've kind of goofed it up a little bit, and I'll show you why. So in short answer, if I hover over this link, you can come down here and take a look at the bottom. You see that it's going to direct me off to store/apparel. That's not where I want to go. There we are. And I'll tell you, if we come down here and take a look, you can see here's my link. I'm using an action link here. I'm going to send off here to the catalog controller. I want to go to the edit action, and I'm going to pass in the ID, and there it is. This should send me off to the edit action, product/edit or whatever, but it doesn't. It sends me off to the category page. Now the reason why is if I come in here to my global ASAX, where my routes are declared, if I cruise on down here and go all the way to the bottom, you can see that I have this route. And unfortunately this route is catching that link. I'm not sure why, but what kind of overall what I'm experiencing here is if you take a look at all these routes, what's happening is my routing scheme is, if you look at these URLs here, too complicated, and it violates what I've been trying to do, which is to hand you a very simple basic application you can build on. And as you note here with these routes, I've kind of wanted to pass in this value store and kind of make sure it's structured so that you can build out and build on top of it. But I really don't need to do that. What I should really do is allow you to set up routing as you need. So that's what I'm going to focus on right now. I'm going to go in and remove all these routes that you see here, and I'm going to restructure the application so it accepts the very basic default routing mechanism that is provided with the template. And at this point, I'm very, very happy. I've been using URL.action and action link everywhere, so this should be an easy change. All right, well, that took about 15 minutes or so, and I've replaced all the routing and kind of made things a little bit simpler in the application. So let's take a look at how I did that real quick. I refactored a whole bunch. I didn't go crazy, but if we take a look at the catalog controller, one of the things that you'll see here is I'm now accepting an integer for the category ID. And this used to say string category, string subcategory, and so on. Problem with that is that it opens up all kinds of weird routing clashes, as you just saw me back into. And so in this case, I was able to simplify the code extremely nicely. Now, one of the things we didn't talk about before was what get default category actually means. And now there is, or there should be at least, a category in the database that is marked as default. And indeed, that's the case in the R database here. And the default category is featured items. So I want that to show up if I don't have a valid ID come in. In addition, I'm not accepting an integer here for product. I'm instead accepting in the product code. And so I'm able to go ahead and look up the product code that way using a string. And so I'm also doing a null check here, making sure that if we do have, we show something if the product doesn't come back. So if someone spoofs the request, then at least we get to show something instead of a yellow screen of death, which is what we had before, which is not a very good idea. So in here, if I put in that, yay, we go back to featured items. If I put in a string here, let's see what happens, and we go back to featured items, that's good. That's exactly what we want. Okay, if we click on the hiking backpack here, you can see that if I come in here and I put something dumb, it boom, jumps us back over here. So that's kind of a forgiving experience. That's what I'm after. The next thing I changed here is I fixed up the login page. I also added a login link up here. So as you know previously, the checkout page kind of held all the login logic. I've changed that around a little bit. I've also added a nice admin password, so I've tweaked this just to work a little bit better, because what I wanted to set up here is specifically the ability to manage a product. And that's where I was when I left off. Now you can see how this is set up. Catalog edit 3. Of course, we want to lock this down. Link would not have shown up if I wasn't an administrator, which is step one, but that's never a proper way of doing this. We also want to make sure this is locked down. And I'll show you how to do that right now. If we come down here into edit, what we want to do here is we want to limit it using an attribute. And we limit it by using authorize, and then we open this up and we set the attribute, and you can see here is our choice. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say roles equals administrator. And so there, if we do that, and then we come back in here, rerun the application, it won't know who I am. So now I can come in here and I can type in edit. And then let's see, oh, I gotta go to catalog. Edit 3, let's try that. And I've added an admin password in. And so now when I log in, it sees me as an administrator, and I can now manage the site as I need to. One of the things I've really looked forward to adding to the commerce site here is checking out with PayPal. It is a really easy way to allow folks that don't have a lot of money to invest into a big commerce system. It's a really nice way to allow them to accept payments for whatever they're wanting to sell. So what I want to do is I want to go ahead and put in the easy checkout with PayPal. It's called PayPal Payments Standard. Now they do have two other ways of checking out using web service APIs, and that's PayFlow and also PayPal Payments Pro. Those cost money. They're kind of a subscription-based kind of thing. So I'm not going to work with those today. Instead, what I'm going to do is integrate with PayPal Standard. Now, it's worth noting that unfortunately I have to step outside of what I've been doing with TDD and some of the different patterns here, because this isn't an integration. What it's going to involve is posting a form of information up to PayPal and kind of running tests back and forth, but they do make this pretty simple with their PayPal sandbox, which is their developers area. So let's get started. The first thing you want to do is head over to PayPal's sandbox. It's the developers area at developer.paypal.com. And when you get there, this is the landing page you're going to see. What you're going to want to do is to create a couple of accounts. So here are my test accounts that I am going to be using today. I've got two. I've got one that represents the buyer, and I named it buyer. And the next one I got as seller. Now these only work in the sandbox. And so when you go and you give an email to use, PayPal will glom on this number, and I don't know what that number is, and then underscore biz for a business account, and then it'll do the same. So I named this one buyer, I named this one seller, and this is the name I ended up with. One of the cool things that PayPal has for you is this test tool called the IPN Simulator. And so you can see here's the URL that you give them to ping, and they give you a bunch of transactions to try here. So that's pretty cool. So that will send some test data to your site. Now the problem that you have, or I'm going to have, is that I'm working on my local dev box. So what I need to do is I need to grab my IP number and I need to expose that. What I'm going to do to get going here is I'm going to set up the code I need for the IPN receiver as well as the PDT receiver, and I'm going to go through the documentation and show you how to do that. When I get to a kind of a finishing point here, I'll go ahead and ping my site with this URL. When you come here to PayPal Developer Central, they have so much for you to look at, as you can imagine. You can look at canned solutions, like partner solutions. You can look at how-tos, which are walkthroughs and so on, and library, which is where I am today, for sample code. And there's SDKs and plugins. There's training, sales and marketing. So there's so much here, which is great. So what I want is the IPN sample code. And there's a bunch, as you can imagine. There we are, ASP.NET C#. So I'm going to use this to get started with and probably plug it straight in. So let's take a look, see what this stuff looks like. Oh, popped up over here, and there it is. So I'm going to take a look at what this code looks like and then go from there.
Okay, I've pasted in the code from PayPal into a nice new PayPal controller, and you can see I have an IPN action. The way this code works is that the IPN is a post, a form post from PayPal, contains a transaction ID, comes to your site. You then turn around and issue another request back to PayPal asking for the information, and then they post the full order information back to you after it's been verified.
What I do want to do, of course, here is to send in inject in the things I'm going to need, which right now looks like it's just going to be an order service. So what I'm going to do here is add some code. I'll take that out so it doesn't barf. I'm going to add some code here real quickly so I can inject the things in that I need, and then we're going to move a little bit closer to testing. What I'm going to do really quickly is make it so that I can receive the IPN from PayPal. So to do that, I need to come up here to IIS. This is IIS 7, and I'm going to add a new application. And I'm just going to call it the MVC storefront. All right, there it is, MVCSF. And let's make sure that it works like it should. Hopefully it will. And I'm going to test this out.
MVCSF. All right, goody gumdrops. It's coming up. It works. That's awesome. So now what I think I'm going to do here is I'm going to make sure that the PayPal controller can issue something properly. So I'm going to give it a view. And that way I can see what's coming up when PayPal calls. All right, there we go. So now I've got an IPN page. So let's go back and take a look again at our page. I don't know why. Did you ever catch yourself closing the browser and you're saying to yourself, why did I just do that? Because I know I need to come back and take a look at it. Okay, so then we got PayPal/IPN. Let's take a look at that. And I forgot to compile because I'm just so used to hitting debug run, which will compile for you. And looks like the IPN page, because I'm not returning a value, so let's go back over here and fix that. Got to go down and return view. Here we go. Sorry for being a dork. And still didn't do it because I didn't compile it. This is funny because I'm so used to hitting debug run right here, and it compiles it for you as you do it. And if you don't compile it and try and use your, there we go. Okay, if you don't compile it and try and use your web server, then it doesn't know what the heck you're talking about. All right, so now I have that. Now what I need to do is I need PayPal to ping me. So in order to do that, I need to expose my IP address. I need to open up port 80, which I believe is already open on my router, and I need to get my my external IP address. So let's take care of that. All right, well, that wasn't terribly easy by any stretch. I had to do a little gymnastics to get this to work. So I'm here working at my home office. What I needed to do, and if you're working in an office, it might not be easy for you to do this. But anyway, I had to go to my wireless router. I had to do port forwarding and make sure that any outside requests for port 80 were redirected to my PC here. And then I had to go to my firewall, and I had to open up port 80 to allow requests coming in. Whee. And then finally, I had to go to a computer outside of my network. And what you're looking at here is my server. And I had to browse, just to be sure, from my server back to my local PC to make sure the port is open. And no, I am not showing you my IP address. So I know that sounds like a lot of gymnastics. I'll leave it to you to come up with a clever way to do it. Just know that if you're going to be working with PayPal's stuff from your web server, it will need to be seen from the outside, so I'll leave it to you to figure out how to do that. But I just wanted to show you how I did it. Alrighty, well, the next step here, and I should have done this in the first place, is to pass in a logger. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to write to my log when PayPal calls and see what they have to say. So, because I want to take a nice close look at what that PDT, or excuse me, the IPN message looks like. And hopefully they'll send me some form of order ID. But it's okay if they don't, because I'm going to look at some documentation here in just a minute as to how to send that along to them. I know that indeed they can do this. So let's just write this here. Logger.info. There we go. PayPal says verified. Sorry about my dumb typing. And then I'll just say down here, logger.error. Oops. Invalid. And I'll just say down here something else. And append it in. Okay, so that's pretty good. Now I have my URL to pass to PayPal, and I'm going to pass it to my PayPal controller's PDT, or excuse me, IPN action here, and hopefully something will happen. Let's see. Alrighty, I'm back on the IPN page, and this is cool. I put in my IPN URL up here. Here's all the information that PayPal will send back to me with the IPN. And so you can see all the good stuff that's in here. Now I know there is a place to put, aha, and this is exactly what I want, custom. Custom is going to be our order ID. So now I'm going to send the IPN off, and hopefully something good will happen.
Great. IPN successfully sent. All right, so let's take a look at our logs. And if we come down here to the logs, and it's in my app data, and scramble all the way down to the bottom, do we have any good stuff? We don't. Error in path value cannot be called. Oh, man. Key. Interesting. Okay, well, we got a bit of an issue here. Well, what I should have done in the first place was to zero out the log, so I've done that now. And let's go back in here into our IPN. Oh, geez, you know what? I bet I forgot to do. In fact, I did. Ah, that's some, and that's really funny. I always do that. Okay, well, let's try and send that IPN again, shall we? All right, I sent it one more time. Let's go back to our log. Ah, look at that. Log entry. PayPal says verified. Now that's exciting. That's big time exciting. Okay. Now what I need to do is I need to get the rest of the code that is going to be able to pull the information out of the IPN. I want the full response. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to grab that and then log it. Okay, well, what I need to do now is to check the information that the IPN sends back. The interesting thing is if we go back and take a look at the submission page, they give you the exact field names that you need. First underscore name, last underscore name, all that stuff, all that good stuff. So this is exactly what we need. The thing I'm mostly concerned with here is custom. And also the transaction ID. So I want to be able to keep both of those things because that's going to identify what transaction ID I need for the order service and so forth. So let's go ahead and see if we can get the logger to log the incoming information. So all I got to do in here is I can say logger.info, and then I just say something like order ID equals. And then I just do a request.form because it's coming in an HTTP post from the IPN, and then it's going to be called custom. So there we are. Easy enough. So all I got to do right now is just got to build. There we go. Come back over to the developer page here and cruise on down to send. And good, successfully sent. That's what we want. So come back over here and I open up my log file. Yeah, there it is. All right, well, that's exciting. So now we know that it's working. And now what I can do is all I got to do is make a page now for when the user checks out. And it's going to be called PayPal Checkout. And what that's going to do is I have to marry up all the items that are in the basket for submitting off to PayPal, and then I just got to do a simple redirect, a redirect using a form post. And that's not so hard to do, so that's going to be the next thing. I had to create a separate checkout page here for PayPal, and that's not so hard to do. You just have to format some inputs the way they want to see it, and then you post the entire cart up to the PayPal web server. And then it does the rest, including notifications and so on. So I'll show you this in just a second. I just want to show you how I organized it really quickly. I have a PayPal controller, as you know, and I added in another method here called checkout. And I go and grab the current order, and if it's empty or the items are zero, I redirect it off to the catalog index page. Otherwise, I render out the view. PayPal checkout, which is the view we opened with looking at. So this is pretty simple stuff here. So what we're doing is we're basically going to loop over the cart. You see we have a few hidden inputs we need to put here straight up front. We have to tell it that this is a cart upload. And the next thing we need to do is put our seller email address in here. And so I'm just going to leave it just like that. I will change this to work with the web config in just a minute. I'm kind of just making sure everything works. Next thing we have to do here is we have to loop through and put in all the information about each item. So PayPal has specific requirements for branding as well. If you're going to have a checkout with PayPal button, they ask you to use their artwork, which you can go on their site and they tell you specifically how to list that on your page. Well, let's just take a look really quickly at how this runs. And so I'm going to hit go here. Now, for this to work, before I check out and do anything, for this to work, what I have to do is I have to head on over again to the PayPal developer site. developer.paypal.com. And so once I'm there, I have to be logged in. As you can see, I had it remember my login. But you have to be logged in the browser that you're working with. And I'll tell you why right now is because if we come back over here to Visual Studio, you can see that this form is submitting to the sandbox. The sandbox is in the developer zone. You have to be a developer to use the sandbox. So it checks your credentials. So if we were not logged in, we would be directed to a login page, and then our cart would be lost. So obviously, when you're going live with this, you want to you want to take out that URL and change it. Okay, well, let's go back in here, and we'll take a look at the cart now. And if I go to checkout, I'm not going to keep it this way. I'm going to try and format this a little bit better. But I just have a quick checkout here with PayPal. I click this. I'm going to take them to a page, and this is my PayPal checkout page. So if we take a look and we view the source here of this form, you can see what the PayPal bits look like. If I come down here, you can see our three business inputs up there telling the cart what to do, who I am, etc. And then here is the shipping and handling and quantity and all that good stuff right there. Okay, so if I hit submit, what's going to happen now is it's going to take me off to the sandbox. Alrighty, so here is my Rob Connery's test store. They automatically brand it for me, which is pretty cool. Shows you what's in the cart. We click to open this. You can kind of see a little bit more information about it. This is mirrors the live interaction. So what I can do now here, this is my buyer account. Automatically puts it in there, which is pretty cool. So I can come in here and I can put in my password for my store, for the buyer. So you can see the whole interaction and the way this works. I don't know why this sandbox seems a little slower than usual right now. So this is all the fake information that they put in here for you. You can see Chase Manhattan checking. You can see this is just ridiculous test data. None of it's real. So hit pay now, and it's going to pay, which is good. Ideally, there we are. Good. So this is what it looks like. This is my transaction ID. So when my IPN comes in, that will be the transaction ID-ish that I see. And all this information, the shipping information, which they have on file, again, this is fake, but this is stuff I have online. So it will actually send the shipping bits down to me, the merchant. Okay, well, that's the basics, and now what I need to do is I got to implement now the IPN and another notification scheme called the PDT. If you notice, I hit continue here, it'll just take me off to the site. So the PDT is something that'll redirect me back to my site. I'll explain more of that later. But right now what I want to do is I want to refactor, I want to implement, and kind of push forward a little bit with implementing PayPal. Setting up the IPN and the PDT for PayPal is pretty simple. So you want to head over to the sandbox at PayPal, and then you want to go click on your test accounts. And so what I'm going to do here is, the thing you want to set up here is on your business account. So you can just click the Enter Sandbox site, and that'll pop open a faux PayPal session. So this is completely fake. It looks like the real PayPal site. In fact, it uses a lot of the same functionality, but it's not at all. And you can tell that because up here it says PayPal Developer Center. Okay, so once you're logged in, the place you want to go is, as soon as this loads up here, there we are, you want to click on Profile. It's not easy to find where we're going here. You might think you want to go to Merchant Services. You don't. You want to go to Profile, and inside here you will have a bunch of choices here for all kinds of things that you can do. The first thing we're going to click on here is the Instant Payment Notification Preferences. And so in here you can see I've had it turned on, and I'm routing it now to my IPN. This is my external IP. So if you click Edit, it's as simple as checking a box and putting in the right URL. Now, a lot of times, if the IPN's not coming in, this URL is wrong. So it's always good to make sure you can test that URL as I did previously. So this is all set up. This is going to route to my local dev box here. The other thing you can do is now you can come down here to Website Payment Preferences. This is the link that you need to click if you want to set up the PDT. So you can see I've set it up here. I've set auto return on. Now that's important. The PDT will not work unless auto return is set on. So if auto return is turned on, at the end of the order, they won't have a button that says continue like you saw previously. Instead, what will happen is it'll just say thank you. You'll be redirected in 10 seconds. If it doesn't happen, click here. Then you want to give it a URL. Now it's important to note here that I'm rerouting to my external IP. You cannot use localhost. It will barf on that. It'll just say it's not a valid URL. Just so you know. Finally, you want to make sure the PDT is turned on, and when you turn it on, it gives you this identity token. Now, you're going to need that token for when you call back to PayPal. It'll ask for that, so you want to make sure you send that back in, and I'll show you that in some upcoming code here. And finally, you have a bunch of selections down here. You can set account to optional. We can just turn that on, and all kinds of choices. I'm not going to go too much into these things, so this is where you set all these preferences. I'll let you read that. But that's how you set up the IPN and PDT. Once those things are set up, you are good to go and ready to receive payments. Well, it's no secret that I haven't really been paying attention to the interface and HTML and the look and feel of the site, although I think it's really important. In general, I started focusing more on the technology and getting the site finished. Well, as you can see, I'm happy to say that one of my compatriots at Avenue A/Razorfish sent me a patch over the weekend and said, well, hey, I hope you don't mind, but I took a swing at making the HTML and CSS a little more cleaner and work a little bit better. And of course, I was as grateful as could be. Many thanks to Ricky Rosario over at Avenue A and Razorfish for this really slick looking code. It just makes the site so much nicer. Makes it look a lot more professional. I'm really stoked with it. And so you can see, you add an item to the cart. We're excited. We want to go check out. And look at this. It just looks so much nicer. We go to check out. He's cleaned it up tremendously. And he's also offered some pointers here on perhaps some better wording. Check out his guest, which is perfect. That's exactly what I want to see. And so we go to billing, which is our flow before. And there it is. This is just good stuff. I'm really stoked. So next up, what I want to talk about is how I've cleaned up the shipping for PayPal. So let's jump into that. Initially, I wanted to write a helper method that would kind of crank out this upload form that we need to send to PayPal. And I had a PayPal helper, and it did all that stuff. But what it turned out is that sometimes when you do those things, when you encapsulate that functionality, you put way too much UI stuff in the code. So what I ended up with was just one single line. And in a way, it kind of removes the essence of what it is you're doing here. And I want to make this as transparent and customizable as possible. So I decided to revert what I did and kind of just clean up the form a little bit here so that it's easy for you to come in and change as you need. So I want to go over this form really quickly, and then I'll show how it works and how we're picking it up on the return. First and foremost is during the flow of the checkout here, you can see that we've already established shipping and billing information. And so when we want to check out with PayPal, you know, we want to make sure that we use this address. We don't want to accept the address that comes from PayPal. Now, we can do that if we want to. We just don't send in any address information, and PayPal will ask the user for the address and then send that information back to us. So what I want to do here is I want to make sure, and these are the main cart inputs right here. So we've got to give it a command, which is we're telling it it's cart. We're going to say the upload is cart. This is one. Upload is one. We give it the business, and that comes out of the web config there. PayPal merchant email, I'll make sure to set that. Custom, we want to make sure we send in the order ID. Tax cart is a new switch that we're sending in, and that is the full tax amount of the cart. We don't want to do tax per item because our tax calculation is taking care of all of that, if an item's taxable or not, and so on. We don't want that logic to be put in the UI. So that's already handled. It's really important to send in the currency code of the store, and so unfortunately, it's really hard to pull that out of the culture info, and so what I'm doing instead is I'm allowing you to set what currency you want to operate in. Let's see. And finally, one thing I didn't mention before is you can override the return when the PDT is when user clicks on the PDT. You saw me set that to my external IP address before. That's for the IPN for sure. But you don't need to do that with the PDT. You can hard code in the return URL. So you can see I've got a nice extension method here that gets the base URL, including the port, also gets HTTPS and all that stuff. And then I'm just combining it with URL.action to the PDT. So this will combine the two and does the same thing for cancellation, which sends them back to their basket. So if they hit cancel at any time during the order, it'll send them back to the site, which is nice. That's the flow we want. So finally, if the shipping address isn't null, we're sending it to PayPal, and we want to make sure we do this so they pre-populate it for us. And then here you can see we're doing the same stuff with the item information, as well as we have a little switch here set for shipping. I have to send shipping this way. Now there's documentation that says you can have a switch up here called shipping, and send in the shipping amount. It doesn't, for some reason, I can't get it to work. I've never been able to bulk send shipping amounts up to PayPal. If any of you folks out there are PayPal wonks and know why that won't happen, please do let me know. What I have to do, unfortunately, is to send the shipping amount here, and you can see how I'm doing it. I'm doing some division, and so I'm sending it up to PayPal using it this way, so each item has shipping associated with it. I wish I didn't have to do it this way, but as I mentioned, if any of you know how to do it, please do let me know. Let's see, and finally, you'll notice that I have here, I have a nice new extension method called toLocalCurrency, and what this does is it extends a decimal. And what it will do is it will do a rounding to the number of digits that are in the culture info of the currency we're using. So if a user is checking out and they're, let's say, using yen that has zero digits, then it'll round this number off properly. So that is an important thing. Okay, well, that's it for this. So here I'm about to check out, and I've got two items here, my Sierra Leather hiking boots, my AdventureWorks tent. So $312.94, we want to make sure all this information gets propped up to PayPal. With my new form settings, hopefully everything will get popped up just fine. So now I'm getting redirected over, and there we are. And so let's check, $312.95, that's what we want to see. And sales tax is correct, shipping and handling is correct, so that's all good. Notice now we have item numbers passed in, so this actually looks quite nice. So I'm going to log in here to my buyer's account. That is all in my sandbox. No money's being transacted here, by the way. I'm going to pause. All right, and so we want to confirm now that the address we're sending in is accurate, and it is, so that's great. Notice here that we have first name, last name, all the information is set, so that's good stuff. And so now we hit pay now. And so this is good. So what's going to happen once we do this, PDT is going to fire. Now notice when I hover over this, it's going to send me back to localhost, which is exactly what it should do. The return that we sent in is overriding what I set at PayPal, and there we are. We have a big fat thank you. All right, well, that's good. So now what we can do is this order has been put into the system. So we should be able to go over to the list method here, and we need to take a look at verified, submitted, charged. There we are. So here's our order under charged, which is exactly where it should be because the PayPal charge came in, and so that's all working great. Got to fix up this a little bit because yes, it looks really ugly. But so we want to be able to ship and close the order. So if we set in tracking here, when we click on go, it will route properly. Order set as shipped. That is exactly what we want to see. So it looks like the basics of this site are working. Of course, I need to kind of go through and stress test this and kind of work it over and over and over to make sure that this is all working properly. But that is the next part of what I'm going to do. I want to go over really quickly the workflow that happens when the IPN or the PDT is received by the site from PayPal, that is to mark an order as charged. So the first thing we're going to do is we want to set the order as charged. That's going to update its status. And we also want to make sure that the any payments received will kind of stop this from going forward. If a payment has been received already, we obviously don't want to put in another transaction, so it'll stop right there. What it's going to do next is it's going to create a PayPal transaction for the system as long as there's been no payments put in, and it's going to save the order down to the database, adjust the inventory, email the order received, a thank you letter to the user, and then also email the administrator. And this again inside our default pipeline here is parroted with the code. If I scroll on down here, you can see we have accept PayPal payment, and this is all laid out in code. Exact same thing. We're setting inventory, sending an email, and so on and so forth. So that brings me to the end of episode 22. And what I'm going to do next is I'm basically going to put my head down. I'm going to crank out as much as I can with this site. It looks good. It's starting to kind of work nicely. I have to stress test it. I have to do a few more things. But ideally, the next screencast will be the introduction of the site in beta, because I really need to get this done. So pardon me if I don't get a lot of screencasts done, but I really want to finish the site up. So next screencast you see will hopefully be my nice, big, shiny announcement. Thanks for watching.